avyaktad vyaktaya sarva prabhavantyar agame ratri agame praliyante tatraiva vyakta samyake. At the beginning of Brahma's day, all living entities become manifest from the unmanifest state. And thereafter, when the night falls, they are merged into the unmanifest again. Bhuta grama sa evayam bhutva bhutva praliyate. Ratri agame vasha bharata. Prabhavatyarha agame. Again and again, when Brahma's day arrives, all living entities come into being. And at the arrival of Brahma's night, they are helplessly annihilated. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The less intelligent who try to remain within this material world may be elevated to higher planets and then again must come down to this planet Earth. During the daytime of Brahma, they can exhibit their activities on higher and lower planets within this material world. But at the coming of Brahma's night, they are all annihilated. From the Vedic scriptures, we may understand scientifically the true nature of this material creation, how it is created, how it is maintained, how it is destroyed, when it is created, when it is destroyed, and why. Through the material sciences, these subject matters are unfathomable. The great scholars in the name of science are putting forth so many speculative theories of how this material creation is operating. And by their own egoistic pride, they make conclusions. And these conclusions are accepted as fact by the unfortunate, ignorant masses within the world. But this material existence is so great because its creator is so great. And we cannot understand in truth anything about this material existence unless we humble ourselves at the lotus feet of its creator. We can accumulate so much data, but with all the science and research books that have ever been compiled, it is an utterly insignificant attempt to describe the most insignificant infinitesimal portion of this material existence. Srila Prabhupada very much admired the honesty and courage of the great scientist Isaac Newton, because he did not claim that he knew, but rather he said that I am just gathering in all of my research and scientific discovery, I am just gathering a few small pebbles in this vast, unlimited ocean of knowledge of this universe. But we find here in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, who is the creator of the universe, is describing some information of how it is working. We all know how Karanodakshayi Vishnu, he's a mere expansion of Krishna. He lays down in the causal ocean, and with his eyes half closed, he goes into the yoga nidra, which is like a sleeping state, but not like our sleep. When we fall asleep, we are in complete ignorance, and we really can't do anything when we're sleeping. Sometimes we have good dreams, sometimes bad dreams, sometimes no dreams, but what do we accomplish when we're sleeping? But Mahavishnu in his sleep, he just, during his exhalation, unlimited universes, like little seeds come out of the pores of his body and gradually expand into entire universes. How many universes? There is no number that the human consciousness could even imagine that can count the number of universes within the cosmic manifestation. And within each universe that Mahavishnu enters, as Shri Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, and he also lays down. This is what the Lord does when he's in his yoga nidra, in his sleeping state. Everything going on within this world, there are so many newspapers in so many cities with so much news. So many people are doing so many different activities, thinking so many thoughts. And there are so many planets within each universe and so many universes. Everything is going on under the supervision, ultimately, of Mahavishnu. And it's all going on while he's sleeping, by his will. Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, from him the lotus flower springs, Ananta Padmanabha, while he's laying in this way. And Brahma is born. The Lord empowers Brahma with transcendental knowledge before he gives him the power to create on his behalf. So here we find the reason why there is a material creation. The whole purpose is to acquire transcendental knowledge and to reawaken our original spiritual consciousness. After Brahma is given transcendental knowledge, he creates, and through this creation he assimilates through disciplic succession this knowledge. There is a purpose of life. And only when we hear from those representatives of Brahma who have received this wisdom from God Himself can we possibly understand the true purpose of life. The 14 planetary systems are within the stem of that lotus. And then by the arrangement of the Lord, He impregnates the seed of life in the form of all living entities who want to enjoy the exploitative world of material existence within the various species of life, which count 8,400,000. What is our significance? within this present body. In illusion, we want to give so much importance to this short life that we have in this world. In the age of Kali Yuga, the most we may hope to live may be slightly over 100 years. But hardly anyone can even reach that age in this society today, because of so much unnatural living and so much pollution in the atmosphere. The average rate of death in the world is somewhere 60, 70 years old. In some places, people hardly live 40 or 50 years old. Anyways, during this short sojourn within this bodily, we are making so many arrangements to be very adored, to acquire so much prestige, to enjoy our senses in so many ways. But what is the significance? It is explained here that in this yuga cycle, there are 4 ages. There is Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, and Kali Yuga. These 4 yugas together equal 4,320,000 years. One yuga cycle. Within one day of Brahma, there are 14 manus. Each manu lives slightly over 71 yuga cycles. Each manu is basically the supervisor of humankind. Most of the demigods, they also take birth along with manu at this particular period. A manu lives approximately 3. And then that manu dies, and a new manu is born. Yuga cycles, and then he dies. There are 14 such manus. They live within a duration of 4,300,000,000 years. And that is one day of Brahma. It is 12 hours by Brahma's calculation. And then he goes to sleep. He sleeps 12 hours. Actually, at the end of each manu, there's a partial devastation within the universe, where practically all of the lower planets and middle planets are destroyed. And at the end of the day of Brahma, when he goes to sleep, it is explained that for 360,000 years, Shankarshan breathes flames into the universe, and everything within all the planets up to Janaloka, Tapaloka, Brahmaloka, Maharloka, everything is burned and destroyed. And then for another 360,000 years there is torrents and torrents of rain, in which the oceans swell and the entire universe up beyond Swargaloka is completely submerged in water. And then for the duration of that 4 billion, that means 720,000 years, is just fire and water just accumulating. And then for the duration of this 4,300,000,000 years of Brahma's night, everything is just completely unmanifested. There is no life. And during this time, Garbhodakshayi Vishnu lays in this great ocean of devastation. And the residents of Janaloka, Tapaloka, Brahmaloka, they offer prayers to the Lord. And then it's time for Brahma to wake up. And at that time, the floods go down, and all living beings, all the living entities who still have desire for material enjoyment, who still have karma to work out because of the reactions of those desires and actions, they who have been within the body of Lord Vishnu during the night of Brahma are again impregnated into the 8,400,000 species of life, to continue trying to look for some enjoyment within this material world. So this is one day of Brahma. Half of Brahma's life is called a prarardha. That means 50 years. At this particular time in our history of the creation, Brahma is slightly over 50 years old. Brahma lives to 100 years, which by our calculation is approximately 311 trillion 40 million years. That is Brahma's life. At the end of his life, Brahma dies. In fact, everyone in the universe. At that time, Lord Vishnu inhales, and all existence enters back into his body. And all the jivas with material desires, still within their hearts, they sleep in a state within Mahavishnu's body until he again exhales, and then the whole process of creation comes and we work out our karma as such. At the time of the annihilation, those who are the close associates of Brahma in Brahmaloka are allowed to achieve the spiritual world. All others simply continue within the cycle of karma. But it is described in Shastra that this 311 trillion 40 million years of the life of Brahma, for Vishnu, it is one calculation of time called a nimesha. Nimesha means 8/15 of a second. 8/15 of a second means slightly over half a second. This is the greatness of Vishnu. And Vishnu, Mahavishnu, is only a temporary expansion of an expansion of an expansion of an expansion of Krishna, who is eternally existing as the Parabrahman in the spiritual world of Goloka Vrindavan. Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Vajami. So who is this Krishna? And what is our position? This is knowledge, to understand this science. Why do we enter into this material world? And why are we infatuated by thinking ourselves the enjoyers when our existence is so infinitesimal? people not knowing the science, they engage in so many sinful activities, trying to get more and more facilities for material sense gratification. Even the greatest rulers, people like Napoleon or Hitler, these people, Alexander, they fight so many battles, they put so much energy into conquering and conquering and conquering. But what are they conquering? What is this earth? What is this universe? What is the time of duration by which they can rule over? It is insignificant. It is nothing. We were explaining Lord Brahma's position, 311 trillion 40 million years. We cannot even calculate what is trillions of years. But it is explained in the causal ocean. Such Brahmas are just coming up like bubbles and popping at every second. And Vishnu's just watching. Srila Prabhupada said, just like the bubbles in the Atlantic Ocean, they come up and then... Prabhupada used the example of the Atlantic Ocean. It was very interesting. When Srila Prabhupada was on the Jaladuta going along the Atlantic Ocean, he was just seeing everything according to the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. When he was seeing the bubbles, he was thinking of Brahmas coming and dying. This is his transcendental vision. But even Lord Brahma, he prays. He prayed to be an insignificant blade of grass in Vrindavan Dham. He prayed to be a speck of dust in the spiritual world, where the devotees would trample upon him with his feet. Krishna explained, Paras, that in the spiritual world, that world beyond this material energy, everything is eternal. Everything is beyond the influence of time. Srila Prabhupada explains, time exists in the spiritual world, but different than its existence in this material world. In this world, everything is under the control of time. Everything is being destroyed moment by time. In the spiritual world, time has no control over anything or anyone. Time simply exists to facilitate wonderful, wonderful variegatedness within the loving relationships between the Lord and his devotees. So how to overcome this misconception and enter again into the world of reality? It is not possible by any material efforts. It is only possible through the process of devotional service. And this can be very scientifically understood also. This is the world where everyone is trying to lord it over. It is the world of exploitation. We come to this world because we want to enjoy separate from God, and we remain in this world so long we want to enjoy separate from God. Our constitutional position is never to enjoy. Our constitutional position is to be enjoyed. And while we are in this world, to develop this consciousness, which is actually within us, you cannot develop something that you do not already have. Just like in athletics, a person develops his strength or his speed. But first of all, he has to have the capacity to do that. A person who has no legs cannot develop the power to run faster and faster and faster. A person who has a disease within the muscles of his arms cannot develop the strength to lift weights. But if you have the capacity within you, then you can develop it. You can expand upon it. So we are all originally Krishna conscious entities. To develop that Krishna consciousness means to simply bring it out. Education. Education means to bring out what is within you. It does not mean to superimpose all sorts of materialistic data within your brain. Modern world has no idea what is education. Even by the very root of the Latin and Greek words of education, Western understanding, they don't know. Now you go to college, and we see all these young boys and young girls, they're in total anxiety about their exams. Even today, I think the exams are going on. Everyone's in distress. I cannot come to the temple today because I have exams. Or even if they're in the temple, the pravachan of Harikatha is going on and they're thinking of their exams. And these days, every hour, people are coming, Swamiji, please give me blessings, I have my exams. So we know when there's exams. Exams are the times when all students come for blessings. During vacation, they don't come for blessings so much. So in this sense, exams are good. Because it puts a pressure and anxiety. Usually people come to God when they're in anxiety. This is nature. And that's why God has created anxiety. Because it's the only way for fools and rascals like us to ever take him seriously. People say, why do good people suffer? Because if they don't suffer, they probably wouldn't be good people. When they suffer, they turn to God, please save me. Please give me blessings, Swamiji, I'm suffering. But when everything's very nice, I have my life under control. No need to lean on these false crutches in the name of faith in God. Everything is very good by my intelligence and my piety. So, people today, they are so much in grief and pressure and anxiety about these exams, especially in India. I have traveled all over the world. I have not seen people so much in anxiety of exams as in India. The United States of America, which has such big universities and colleges and high schools and grammar schools, nobody even cares about exams. At least I never did. And nobody I ever knew ever did. Somehow or other, you just go through the year, you do your studies, you take the exam, you pass, and it's very good. You go to Harvard University, MIT, whatever. But here, little children, 7, 8 years old, are more in distress and under pressure of exams than people going for their PhD finals at MIT or Harvard. I'm telling you, seriously. It's torturous. Little girls, simply studying. Maharaj, today I have my exams. When I'm preaching at the biggest universities in America, nobody's under that pressure. Most of them, they're out getting intoxicated, going with girlfriends, and then the next day they take their exam and they pass. Literally. This land has become infatuated by mundane education. Which isn't, I'm not saying it is bad, but it is a cause of great anxiety. And we must understand what is education. That is what is bad. That they're missing the point of education. These poor young people, they're just cramming accumulation of more and more and more data into their brains to memorize it. I have to remember this equation. I have to remember this historical date. So many things memorizing, memorizing, memorizing. But education means to bring out what is already within you. Doesn't mean to bring in what has nothing to do with you. Please forgive me for speaking honestly. And this is the greatness of this land of India. It has the highest, greatest scientific scriptures which teach us the process of releasing the energy of the soul, which is Sat-Chit Ananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. Raja-vijaraja-guyam pavitramitam-uttama. Krishna explains what is the highest, purest, most important knowledge. That knowledge which gives direct perception of the self. That knowledge which stops the cycle of birth and death. That knowledge which gives real bliss and love within our life. That is true knowledge. In Sri Shopanishad it says that we should cultivate knowledge and ignorance simultaneously. So many of our devotees who are students, they are doing like this. But in real sense, acquiring ignorance means understanding the ignorant nature of this material world. Doesn't mean becoming ignorant. It means understanding what is ignorance. What is the result of forgetfulness of God and why? And how to remember God and why. This is a great science. So here we find the real education, the real science of how this material existence is working and why. We are Jivatma Tathasta Shakti. There are 14 planetary systems within this material creation that we are temporarily residing. And according to our particular desires, we will speak and we will behave. Now, in previous yugas, human society was so developed as far as mental and physical control of their lives, that there would be a karmic consequence to anything that happened to be a thought in your mind. If you thought of something illicit, you would have to experience the suffering of the karmic reaction. But Krishna is merciful. Therefore, in Kali Yuga, to control the mind is very difficult. Even Arjuna, he was in Dwapara Yuga. He said that to control the mind is more difficult than the wind. But in Kali Yuga, we are responsible not for our thoughts, but for our actions and our words. But the particular thoughts that you cultivate in life will inevitably come out in the form of an expression through words and action. So therefore, yoga or religion is the process of purifying the mind, to speak and to behave in such a way that it liberates the soul rather than entangles the soul. And these 14 planetary systems are lower and higher. The Patala region is the hellish planets. For people who misuse their independence in very, very sinful ways, causing harm and violence to others, totally misusing the God-given facility of the human life that we have been given by the Lord, they are cast down into states of terrible, terrible suffering. In the hellish planets, You are given a body that is specially designed by material nature to suffer. That's all. Nothing else. It's like we see people are creating in the industries various machinery or various articles that have a very, very specific purpose. So the bodies in the hellish planets, this is their only purpose. To experience excruciating, terrible agony and pain and not die. According to your sentence. And then there is the middle planets. Bhuloka, Bhuvarloka. These planets particularly are meant for people who have a particular karma where there are various degrees of enjoyment and suffering. There is no enjoyment in the hellish planets, not a trace. No relief. In this world, we suffer some, but we also have some relief. We also have some enjoyment. No matter how anxiety you are, when you go to sleep, you forget it. In the hellish planets, you don't even get to go to sleep. 24 hours a day. And you may, why? You have brought it on yourself. No one's doing it to you. You have done it to yourself. You put your hand in the fire, you have to suffer the burn. We are responsible. It is very important to understand the responsibility of human life. So these middle planets, there is some pleasure and some enjoyment according to our karmic reactions. Bhuloka, Bhuvarloka, Swargaloka. Then there is Maharloka, Tapaloka, Janaloka, Brahmaloka. They are the higher planets. Up to Swargaloka, where Indra resides as the king, there is great, great enjoyment. Practically no suffering. You simply enjoy your mind and senses to such degrees that we cannot even imagine in this world. In this world, if there's some relief from pain, we think, oh, this is very nice. But there, people are really enjoying. The bodies of the heavenly damsels, when they perspire, it smells like nectar coming from lotus flowers. In this world, we have to take so many chemicals just to try to cover these terrible, terrible fragrances. In this world, people get sick and they vomit and they have fevers and so many things. In the heavenly planets, nothing like this. You're simply enjoying. That is good karma. But ultimately, the karma finishes and you drop down. So many ways you drop down. Sometimes you come as a drop, the spirit soul enters into a drop of rain. And it falls all the way down from the higher planets and comes down, lands, becomes a blade of grass. Then the cow eats the grass. Then the man drinks the cow's milk. Then the man impregnates the woman. And that little soul travels in this way into the womb of the woman, and then you become a little baby. Big, big gods in the heavens. They end up a piece of grass and gray. Later on, a little baby crying. Suffering condition. Abramabhuvana loka punaravartana. Krishna says, forget all this going up and going down. Surrender to me. That is the goal of life. Above Swargaloka is Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka. These are not for people who are enjoyers. These are for great yogis, for people who have taken sannyas, who have followed very strictly the lives of brahmacharis. It is said if you follow strictly, without flaw, the varnashram dharma system for 100 births, you can become Lord Brahma. But that's very difficult. But you can do. But we are not concerned with this. So in the upper planets, This is where people have great siddhis. They are very renounced. They are detached. They are enjoying the pleasures of renunciation, tapasya. They are all great yogis, many great devotees. But at the time of annihilation of the universe, they too, again, just enter into the deep slumber. And in the next universe, they again have to be born. And when their pious credits as great yogis expire, there is every chance that they will fall again into the tendency for material enjoyment and go down to the lower planets. So what is the use? Therefore, Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that we should not waste our human lives for this. Less intelligent people go to the demigods asking them for better situations within this world, because it is Martya Loka. Prabhupada used the example, if you're in a prison, better to use your energy to get out of the prison than to be elevated to a nicer prison cell. Krishna has come to take us out. He has sent his representatives to take us out. And it is actually very simple. If we simply give up the desire to enjoy separate from God, if we develop a mood of service rather than a mood of an exploitation, this is the means by which we can enter into that spiritual realm beyond birth, beyond death. The spiritual world of Vaikuntha, every spirit soul existing, is no longer under any of the influences of material time, or even Garbo Dakshayi Vishnu, Karuna Dakshayi Vishnu, or Chiro Dakshayi Vishnu. They are directly immersed in the loving service of Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. And this is why Bhagavad Gita is spoken, to give us the understanding how to return back home, back to Godhead. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati very much was strong about this term Godhead. The word God is basically Christian terminology, and it is a very vague conception. Because when it comes into Hindu society, there are so many gods. But Godhead means Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha. The supreme source of all incarnations, the supreme source of everything that exists. And we are so fortunate. We are born in a particular time within this creation where there is no better opportunity to develop this mood of humble service and return back to the spiritual world. Once in every day of Brahma. That means once, only one time in 4,300,000,000 years does Krishna personally appear in his original form. And he only appears for 125 years. And only once in a day of Brahma does Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appear as Swayam Bhagwan in the age of Kali. Actually, in every yuga cycle, Krishna and Lord Chaitanya appear. That is a fact. Every Kali Yuga, Lord Chaitanya comes. Every Dwapara Yuga, Krishna comes. But they come as the Yuga avatar. Lord Chaitanya comes, Krishna depicts his pastimes, he kills demons, and Lord Chaitanya establishes Yuga Dharma. But these forms that come in every Kali Yuga are incarnations. They are avatars that are born of Kshirodakshayi Vishnu. Only once in every 1,000 Yuga cycles, only once in every 4,300,000,000 years does Krishna appear in his original form. Not as an avatar, but as Krishna Sthu Bhagavan Swayam in his original form, Govinda, revealing the eternal pastimes of Vrindavan Dham. And of all the Chaitanya Gauranga avatars in every Kali Yuga, only once in a day of Brahma does the original Lord Chaitanya, who is Krishna experiencing the bliss and ecstasy of Radha, that Lord Chaitanya in his original mood of Radha and Krishna comes only once in a day of Brahma. And he has appeared hardly 500 years ago. And we are still in contact with a disciplic succession from that original Swayam Bhagavan, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Radharani, giving the bliss and the ecstasy of Vrindavan to everyone indiscriminately who simply accept it. There's only a few acharyas between us and him. Srila Prabhupada, Jagannath Das Babaji, several acharyas, and then Baladeva Vidyabhushan, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Then there were 3-4 acharyas, then there was Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivas Acharya, Jiva Goswami, Rup Sanatan, and then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. What an opportunity. The golden opportunity given by the golden avatar. How valuable and priceless this treasure is. But we must understand how to receive it. We can receive it to the extent we become servant. That is very important. When we come before the deity, we don't come to enjoy seeing the deity. We should come to be enjoyed by being seen by the deity. When we are chanting the holy names, we shouldn't chant for pleasure. We should chant to give pleasure. That is the mood of service. Some people, they come and they say, "It is so difficult for me to chant my japa. I don't like it. What should I do?" This is very good if you don't like it. No problem. You're not supposed to do it because you like it. You do it because Krishna likes it. That is how you make spiritual advancement. If your mind is uncontrolled and running wild, obviously you're not going to get such ecstatic experiences. But if you're just struggling to control the mind and put it on the name, you're giving Krishna ecstatic experiences just by your humble and sincere effort. And when we're performing our service, we have to actually put our mind and our heart into our service. It should not be something mechanical. This is the difference between an imitationist and someone following in the footsteps of the great acharyas. Two people are doing the same thing. One might be simply imitating, and one may be sincerely following in the footsteps. We may have no taste. You are told to chant japa. You are told to dance in kirtan. So you may say, if I have no feeling, if I have no love, I'm just imitating. Imitating Lord Chaitanya and his associates when I dance. Imitating the great souls when I chant my japa. Imitate pure souls when I'm offering arti or doing any other seva. What is the difference? Imitation means when you perform your devotional activities with the desire for material enjoyment or prestige. Kanaka Kamani Pratishta. When we desire distinction, prestige, that just see what a great devotee I am, what a great sadhu I am. Or we're thinking I will get some benefits, material benefits by doing this. That is called imitation. But if you are doing it sincerely for purification, even if you're doing it with no taste, even if you're doing it simply by force because I know I'm supposed to do it, it is following in the footsteps because it is in the mood of purification. It is with a sincere desire. It is not for material gain. So when we are performing our service, our tendency is to just go through the motions, but our mind is somewhere else. And that's why Srila Prabhupada was very much concerned that every devotee who wants to make spiritual advancement must take responsibility. If you're just acting under someone, you'll just do what you're told. That's what you're supposed to do. But if you feel responsible for what you're doing, responsible for carrying out that order, then your mind is engaged. When there is responsibility, there is engagement of the mind. Where there is no responsibility, we just do it and our mind can go anywhere. Because we are not really concerned with the after effects or anything else. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada said, you will make spiritual advancement to the degree you take on responsibility in the service of Guru and Krishna. This is the sign of someone who is sincere, is willing to take responsibility. We are asked to perform this service. We take the responsibility to do it right, and we see it through. We don't just think, well, I've been asked to clean, so I'll clean. I'm doing what I was told. But if it gets messy again, that's not my business. You're responsible, you'll clean, and you'll make sure 24 hours a day it's kept clean because it is your responsibility. You'll make spiritual advancement if you clean that way. If you don't take responsibility, your spiritual progress will be very slow. You'll do it and you'll think somebody else, somebody else. The vows that we take on initiation, we are responsible. We must behave with the Vaishnavas responsible. We should know. If you find fault with devotees, whatever fault you find with them, that fault will enter into your mind and your heart and contaminate your consciousness. If you see the good in a devotee, that good will come and enlighten your consciousness. So we should be responsible. What we say, what we think, it's very important. The responsibilities we have in our relationships with other Vaishnavas is very, very grave and important. It will determine how much you make spiritual advancement. People love to find faults. It's Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga, ocean of faults. And why is it an ocean of faults? Because everybody's looking at faults in others, and as you look at faults in others, faults come into you. And as more faults come into you, you look for more faults in others, more faults come into you. When everyone's doing that, ocean of faults. Nidedo, kaler dosa nidedajan, astihe kumam. That is the dilemma. So a devotee doesn't look for faults. A devotee doesn't blame anyone or anything. A devotee is humble. Tathema kampam susamikshamano bunjana evatmakritam vipagam. When we're suffering in this world, which is inevitable, we see that I have done past activities that I deserve this. It may be coming through this person, it may be coming through this circumstance, but I brought it upon myself. There's no one to blame but me. But at the same time, we understand as devotees that it's by Krishna's grace. It's Krishna's grace that he's letting my own karma come to whatever extent he feels it's good for me. Therefore, a devotee is always looking for Krishna, always looking for the good, always looking for a philosophical shelter in every situation of life. And those who are not sincere, when everything's good, they love to glorify others. But as soon as something comes upon me that is against my ego, we lash out like serpents. That is not Vaishnav. Vaishnav is one who sees Krishna, one who is looking for his own purification or her own purification in every situation, never looking for faults in others. In fact, within Vaishnav society, the only people who should be looking for faults in other devotees are the Diksha Guru and the Shiksha Guru, no one else. No one else should be finding faults in each other. If you see one, you approach Shiksha Guru, what should I do about this problem? My mind is... But we should never speak against another devotee. It is like fire. It's like lighting fire within your heart. It will burn to ashes your good qualities. So in this way, devotees must give up this mentality that I am the controller. To judge another means to take the position of God. There's only one judge, Krishna. There's only one enjoyer, Krishna. When we try to enjoy or we try to judge, we are artificially trying to imitate God. There's no conception of service attitude in that mood. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came with a simple process. Trinarapi sunichena, trorapi sahishnana, amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. This is the verse that will take you to the spiritual world. What is that beautiful verse in Gita? Parastasma tu bhavonyo vyakta vyakta sanatana. Yasa sarveshu bhuteshu nasyatsu navinashyati. Beyond this material world of birth and death, there is another nature which is eternal, which is full of bliss, which is saturated with love. Brahma Samhita describes that same Lord Brahma we are talking about. He gives us a glimpse into the spiritual world. What is the nature? Where everyone is constantly hearing the sweet ambrosial nectar of Krishna's flute. That flute is simply awakening unlimited ecstasy in everyone's heart. And it is heard at all times by everyone in the spiritual world. And all talking is singing. And all dancing, all walking is dancing. It is the abode of love. It is the abode of service. Everyone wants to serve Krishna. Everyone wants to serve one another. No one is envious. In this world, why we find fault in others? Because out of jealousy and out of jealous competition, we are all trying to outdo each other. But in the spiritual world, everyone wants to take the humble position of serving one another. Why? Because they know that is the only mood that will give satisfaction to Krishna. One time in a Calcutta newspaper, they were condemning Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati's Gaudiya Math. They were saying, this Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, this Gaudiya Math, they are simply teaching a type of slavery, that you just be enjoyed by Krishna. You just be a servant. So this is very unhealthy for society. Especially during, we are nationalists, we must build armies, we want to develop this nation with so much industry and everything else, therefore we have to impel people to be the enjoyers. This is the capitalistic way. The basis of capitalistic philosophy is you are an enjoyer. And you will be happy to the degree you can enjoy sense gratification, and the harder you work and the more creative your developments are within your occupation, the more you will enjoy. So everybody compete against one another and try to enjoy as much as you can through your creative intelligence. And in this way, people are very proud that a simple man living in a log cabin became the President of the United States of America. This is the greatness. That someone who is born with nothing, living in the gutters, is now living in a beautiful, beautiful, spacious mansion with hundreds of servants, beautiful cars, airplanes, and people all over the world are running to learn. How is this possible? We want this. But Srila Prabhupada said we should become spiritual capitalists. That means we want to compete in a mood of service to give more and more and more people the opportunity to achieve the real treasure of Krishna Prema. Our capital is the mercy of Guru and Krishna. And we want to distribute it. And we want to use all our creativity and all of our energy to work together to give it to everyone. That is spiritual life. So the service mood is what brings us to the transcendental realm beyond this material existence. Through jnana, through cultivation of knowledge, through practicing of yoga asanas, pranayama, through meditation, dhyana, achieving higher states of peace, you can be elevated to higher states, but you cannot get out of material existence through these processes. It is only through even giving up the desire for peace. It is only through unconditional surrender to the will of God in a mood of a servant can you come out of this world of exploitation and enter into the spiritual realm. And this is what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given. And this is what we are so fortunate to receive. And one who achieves such a position of pure devotional service, that Supreme Lord Krishna, whose insignificant manifestation of an expansion is Mahavishnu, whose mere inhalation destroys all the innumerable Brahmas and all creation, Krishna becomes the servant of those devotees who have no desire for any material enjoyment, for those who simply want to serve him and please him, and serve him and please his devotees. Those who are the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord become so dear to the Lord descends to give them pleasure. In this way, there is a competition of who can give pleasure. Raghunath Das Goswami, he was not born in Brahmin family. He was Kayasta, considered Sudras by some, Vaishyas, Kshatriyas by others. He was living in Vrindavan at the banks of Sri Radha Kund, and he was with such humility and devotion chanting the holy names. His standard was so high. He would only take every few days a little buttermilk. And when he would drink it, he would think, just see how sinful I am, taking all this time away from my service just to enjoy sense gratification and maintain this body. We should not be like that. We should aspire for that mood. But if you try to imitate that, you will soon die. Therefore, Bhakti Vinod Thakur said, take this prasad to your full satisfaction. Full satisfaction doesn't mean I'm the enjoyer. It means I know that this is what my Guru and Krishna want, so this is what I will do. Take nice prasad. But Raghunath Das, when he was sitting there chanting, Sri Sanatan Goswami came to visit him. And what did he see? It was during the day. Raghunath was chanting, his eyes were closed, he was completely immersed in chanting Krishna's holy names.
Krishna,
just near Raghunath Das Goswamiji, tigers were coming and they were drinking water from Sri Radha Shyamakund. And tigers are very dangerous. Raghunath didn't even see them. And who came? Nakshirodakshaya Vishnu, he didn't come. Indra didn't come. Brahma didn't come. Kshirodakshaya Vishnu, Garabodakshayini Vishnu, not even Mahavishnu came. Even Lord Narayan didn't come. Even Shankarshan, Adi Ruda, Prajumana, Vasudeva, they didn't come. Krishna himself, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam, the source of all avatars, the source of all energies, the controller of all controllers, he personally came and stood there with a stick to protect Raghunath Das from danger of the tigers. And when Sanatan Goswami saw this, he could understand, who is this Raghunath Das Goswami? But as his Shiksha Guru, he chastised him. He said, Raghunath Das, understand, what are you doing when you are chanting the holy names? You are chanting as a service to Krishna, for the pleasure of Krishna. Why do we chant? We are chanting in prayer, Krishna, engage me in your service. We are trying to cleanse our hearts through chanting so we can serve the Lord with no material desires, with pure love. But Krishna is coming to serve you. So Raghunath felt very ashamed. Krishna is coming to serve me. This is very bad. I want to serve him. So he built a bhajan kutir where no tigers could come, where he was protected from the sun, so he could chant the holy names for Krishna's pleasure. But Krishna, that Supreme Lord, is always anxious to come to serve his devotees. During when it was Sanatan Goswamiji's appearance day, Rupa Goswami wanted to make feast for him. But he was doing Madhukari, and Madhukari, what feast can you get? You get maybe little jaggery, gur, maybe some roti, that's all. I used to do Madhukari. In Vrindavan, when you do Madhukari, you get some big, thick rotis and sometimes some dal and maybe a piece of jaggery. Other than that, very difficult. And in those days, they were living in jungles. So a beautiful little girl came and said, oh, I heard your guru is having his birthday. We have this nice kheer. Please give it. So he went and gave it. Sanatan Goswami began to eat it. He said to Rupa Goswami, this kheer is giving me ecstasies. Where did you get? A little girl gave, cowherd girl. What would she look like? As he was describing, they both understood it was Sri Radharani. Who is Sri Radharani? Madan, Mohan, Mohini. In the spiritual world beyond all material creation, the source of all incarnations, Krishna, his pleasure potency, in whom he is always subordinate to, Sri Radharani, is coming down to personally cook for her devotees who have surrendered everything to her. This is the glory of bhakti. This is the glory of Krishna. He is bhaktivatsal. And to enter into this realm of pure spiritual consciousness, of the most divine reciprocation of love, for this purpose, Srila Prabhupada, on behalf of Lord Chaitanya and the previous acharyas, has opened these temples. Radha Das Bihari Mandir, Radha Gopinath Mandir, throughout the world, to teach us all how to be the servant of the servant, in how to cleanse our hearts through the simple process of chanting the holy names. Bilvamangala Thakur has said that Maya Devi, who is the predominating personality who controls this material existence, since I have been serving my Lord Sri Krishna, even she is standing before me with folded palms as my servant. So we have heard today about how great and how wonderful this material creation is working, and how utterly insignificant we are in our present life. But simply by the grace of Krishna, by petitioning His mercy, His causeless mercy, by calling out His name as His humble servant, Krishna personally, not through His expansions, He personally, through His devotees, comes into our life and takes us back home, back to Godhead. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.